sense of sailing ships in the foreground.
Yeah, let me pull it down.
Well, what
either flags or crow's nest on masts. Okay.
Or little bitty people in parachutes and you know,
what about
skydiving?
And if you look at the entire, if you blur your eyes like you had said at the beginning of the show, blur your eyes, all those skydivers come together into one big waving flag-looking thing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and individually, you know, you got, you know, obviously if anyone's familiar with skydiving, the you know, the type of clothing they wear, you literally have millions of little stick figures there with big flags, you know, around them.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, this person was so incredibly close and then perhaps took it one thing too far because of that water connection. Why? Because then I have what I would have done, and this is where I probably wouldn't do very well. This kind of thing. You know, if you put together the waterfront connection that this person had picked up on, that's not in the target, by the way.
Right.
But if you put that together with the flags and the crow's nest and the in the air and up above the ground and things like that, that I can see where the person came to a conclusion.
Right. Right.
Perhaps.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, that's the battle that you're constantly, you know, waging against yourself is you get a little snippet of information and immediately, you know, the namer guesser part of your brain is immediately trying to
make sense
not
of it.
Describe, it's trying to identify.
Right.
Well, guys, I have a question though. We're looking at this image with these little flag type things here. Then it looks like, as far as the whole image goes, these are at the bottom of the image, and there's he drew like a ground, like, you know, like a line,
and
right.
And many of them.
Okay.
I mean, he drew multiple of them.
But
only
what
three,
I'm thinking,
and they're not 144.
Now,
but, you know, still a lot.
Well, what I said earlier, as far as those roads and stuff like that, I said they looked similar to what looks like an airport, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through the whole goofiness of, you know, you have to go in the air to skydive and all that stuff.
Right.
If I remember correctly, you seen that we just flew a plane recently to Kansas. The airport.
Kansas? What the heck are you doing in Kansas?
Finding Toto.
Oh.
What I'm saying is, when we were at the airport, I noticed on.
Wanted to say so many things. Okay.
What?
Keep going. What were we doing in Kansas?
Killing the Wicked Witch.
Yeah. Right? We were looking for one.
Ah, yes. But when we were taking off on the plane, I noticed that we were obviously at an airport, DTE, International, and I just pimped the airport. I can't believe I just did that. Sorry.
DTE. What is?
Oh, I'm thinking of never mind. I'm pimping everybody right now.
Yeah, you're really doing good.
Forget it. I'm screwing a soul. Oh, man. What
good
have I
job.
Done?
What are you trying to say, though?
DTW.
DTW.
That's the airport.
Yeah.
DTE. What's wrong with me? Anyways, there were these types of flags on the runways. With the little things that blow in the wind too, exactly, exactly that type of crow's nest type thing, or
right.
the there's flags on the
right,
runway.
Right, because they're indicators and they're measurements.
I really can see what you guys were saying too. It really does tie in with the
overall photo.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as specifics here go,
right,
those flags really are accurate. Because I mean, if he's going, okay, well, we can't. When you're doing this thing, you're not thinking, well, I think it's an airport. You're not saying that to yourself. You're not supposed to say it to yourself. But he got the impression of something. I mean, maybe you can't see it in the picture itself.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, you know, I might be stretching it a bit here too, Vance. Just let me know. You can't see, you know, any details on the ground, you know, below these people that are all tied together. This gross of people that Doug noted earlier that are all tied together. But it looks like they're at an airport, in my opinion. And
well, yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. In regards to remote viewing, yeah, just don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we just don't have enough information as a remote viewer anyway at that point to know this early on in remote viewing session.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to, you know, note that you're not remote viewing the picture. You're remote viewing the event or the place or the structure or the person or the thing or the concept that the tasker has ask the question on. The picture is just basically reference material.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, quite often a remote viewer will get things in their session that are, you know, at the site but may not be represented in the picture. But, you know, like I say, we can't get too carried away.
Yeah.
The tasking on this was to describe, you know, the focus of this picture and event at the time of the photograph. So it places the remote viewer and the specific time of the photograph, and the question was to describe the focus of the picture. Now, that, you know, that could be several things. The focus of the picture would be, one, the formation of skydivers, but also the form, you know, the focus of the picture in my mind when I look at it is also these roadways, you know, underneath, because it, they're so novel in the fact that how they're angled and everything else. I know, as you know, a more advanced remote viewer, that I would immediately probably be sucked into that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the flags, hard to say. You know, he could have been, you know, picking up on flags down at the airport, or it could just literally be his subconscious rendering of, you know, little bitty
people
with very loose fitting clothing.
Also, on the next page that remote viewer sent in,
mm-hmm.
very organic.
Right.
Parts look like they... Oh, I can't read it.
Yeah, shapes fold in on self. And,
yeah.
Part looks like caught in the wind.
Right, yeah.
This person probably was there at that point in time. I mean, I would look at that stuff and say, you know what? The person didn't say, you know... you know, everybody is drinking and dancing, you know, like they're at a bar or something.
Yeah.
You know, the person said very organic parts look like they are caught in the wind. This person very well could have, for a brief moment in time, been picking up on that target.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And wrote it down and proved it to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then drew some ships, too, which was pretty
right.
cool.
It's a really, really good drawing.
Yeah. But, you know, that was just a bonus.
You see how my drawings are? Just like lines.
Yeah, yeah. Mine resemble yours, actually. I'm envious of Viewer 7's sketching ability.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think this person could have very well been at that point in time,
that's
looking
site.
At mm-hmm. that at that site,
mm-hmm.
And describing it, and there was some extraneous information coming in as well,
mm-hmm.
to be picked up on. But there's enough about this particular session that really gets me excited about remote viewing.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a lot of this stuff has been staggering so far, Vance. I don't know how you. I mean. Having to go through all this stuff like you do, which we thank you so much for. There's my goopy drawing. Yeah, great. going through all this stuff, we're looking at all the stuff right now, Vance. Having to go through all this stuff, it must be a bear of a task. I mean, if you could, I'm just curious for the audience, too. What do you want to analyze it?
Well, you know, as I go along and as I do more analysis, I'm starting to develop a structured way to make it easier for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, really, really hard to properly and accurately, you know, represent what people are submitting because, you know, I you get 11 sessions and they're short sessions. They're only 2 or 3 pages,
mm-hmm.
you know, except for a couple exceptions. There was a 5-page, you know, which is still considered a short session.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of data in regards or, you know, comparatively speaking to you know, bigger sessions, but yeah, real difficult because, you know, that's a lot of pages to go through and accurately portray and not omit data and, yeah, it's real tough, you know, and, you know, basically what I do is I sit down and, you know, start with viewer 01 and, you know, basically report what they submitted, you know, in regards to the question, and the question was describe the target, and you basically try to get down the information that they put through
mm-hmm.
without omitting anything, and you know, try not to filter too much. But you know, you have to understand that, you know, this initial stages, you know, stages 1 through 3 here, where we're just getting, you know, an ideogram, some gross percept, and then a sketch.
Yeah.
You're, you know, literally those stages are the fundamental stages where you're just kind of getting to the target. So not every single, you know, sound, taste, smell, dimension that you put down is going to be necessarily correct. A lot of it is, but you're just getting to the target site. You're just kind of, you know, cutting the swaths, so to speak, to the target.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until later stages, into, you know, later stages of stage 4, 5, and 6, and 7, where you're really getting detailed information, and a remote viewer has enough time on site, 30, 45 minutes or an hour, where they're actually starting to extract this detailed information. Yeah, this is just the beginning stages. But yeah, it's real daunting as far as a task. And when you, when we do real targets, and you know, before a break here, I want to talk about something we've done recently here at Trinity Science, where you have a team of remote viewers. You might have 3-4 remote viewers, and you're on an operational assignment, something real life, something, you know, that's not that this is not important, but something that's really pertinent to something that's going on in the world. And you get 20, 30, 40 pages of session work from 3 or 4 people, and there might be multiple taskings of 3 or 4 different target IDs, and you try to analyze it. That's tough.
I could imagine.
That's really tough, and it's, you know, that is really, it's very time consuming and very error prone if you're not careful, and you gotta step away, take breaks, you know, come back, you know, in a day or so, and that's why it's so time consuming, and you just can't do anything, you know, quick enough, basically, when it comes to things that are time critical. Real tough.
Sounds like ghost hunting, where you come back with tons of data and you have hours of stuff to go through. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that I'm fascinated with. I mean, and that I don't know a lot about is what you guys do. But I know enough, you know, technology-wise that you guys are dealing with, you know, googobs of data.
Yep.
And you got to go through it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the same exact thing, just different. Just different
methods.
We're just
looking for different things. We're looking for abnormalities in the... in the information we bring back.
Exactly.
And captured.
And speaking of break, why don't we do that, Vance? Let's take a quick break here. Because this is a lot to take on, man. This is a lot to take on. I mean, I'm looking at this stuff, and I can't... This is one of those times I'm actually excited to go to work. It's one of those times I'm actually excited to leave the haunted basement, unfortunately, because I don't like to leave in the middle of the show, but everybody knows what's going on with my work schedule right now. But I'm actually looking forward to going to work, because I'm going to get to go to work, sit down on my computer, and look at all this stuff, and maybe catch the tail end of the show, too. I do that.
Oh, really?
If I get in early enough and I get myself set, I do check up on my boys.
All right, Vance, we're going to have to not talk about him.
So hopefully I can be a listener. I get into work tonight, and I'll be able to listen to maybe the last 15 minutes, hopefully, of this show. So, let's take a quick break. So I can get out of here. You guys, oh man, I wish I could stay here for this too.
We'll be back.
I'm so torn. Yeah. So bad.
I know. But we'll be back with Will, myself, and Vance S. West of TrinityScience.com. So listen to this. Be right back.
Bye.
Goodman-Larson, and if you want to find me with regard to Mars and time travel, you can go to www.doortoatlantis.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Listen to W Paranormal Talk Radio Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Pioneer Radio Network. For show information, visit WParanormal.com.
Ghost Hunting, my ethereal anti-drug.
This is Pat Bichu of the Bell Witch website, www.bellwitch.org, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
You're all very shy down here.
Ooh, powerful, powerful love, bringing us back that way. Thanks, Will. This is Doug.
I'm Will.
And this is Ghostly Talk. We've lost Scott L. for the time being. He's gone off to work. But he was very excited, I know, to go over his results and some of the other results from the Open Remote Viewing Project number 2, co-hosted or sponsored or whatever by Ghostly Talk, of course, and TrinityScience.com. And we have Vance West. Vance?
.com.
Yes. TrinityScience.com. And we've been going over the ORVP2. What have you learned this time around?
Well, I guess the biggest thing I've learned is what's really interesting to me as someone that's doing a lot of analysis of session work and is how differently individuals and remote viewers can perceive information. It's never the same. It's always different from viewer to viewer, and it's always educational, I guess, to do these things and look at data and maybe try to piece together what people were doing and what they were getting as far as data. It's just very, very interesting.
Theoretically, if a whole bunch of remote viewers come together, and I mean trained remote viewers or people mm-hmm. who went through training or are going through training, and you're learning all pretty much the same things, and you learn at, you know, different rates probably and perfect the task or work on the task at different rates, but you're learning from the same source materials or similar people, you'll develop some kind of mindset, a lot like, you know, I don't want to say like a herd mentality, but that's kind of what I mean is you know, you've got the same source materials that, as far as, like, you know, books and tutorials and learning, and then you've got each other to ask questions of, you know, all remote viewers. But when you bring in general public,
mm-hmm.
right, like we're doing with ORVP, the, you know, the series of two so far, ORVP, you bring in anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody, you know, they maybe they've sat down and read some books, maybe they've gone through some online tutorials, maybe they've seen the presentation that you put together or not. I mean, these could be anybody, and sit down with pencil and paper or pen and paper and write the target ID on the top and go.
Right.
You're opening it up to so many different. Backgrounds, thought processes on how this should work or how it does work or whether it does work or not. You know, we really opened it up to everybody, and that really does tend to allow us to explore the differences in people and how they perceive things.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a real interesting point, because my experience has been that, you know, even though someone is, you know, if they're formally trained or they have some sort of structured training from some source, there's still these, you know, differences in every single remote viewer, because every person is unique, of course. Everyone's coming from their own backgrounds, their own life experiences and you know, emotional makeups and everything else. So every remote viewer has a really personal perspective on everything. If we had one target, you know, if we had a, you know, target of a building, and you had 10 trained remote viewers that were doing, you know, 45 minute sessions, you know, 20 pages of work, you would have 20, you know, totally different perspectives, although the end result would represent the target more than likely, but they would get to it and just a variety of different ways. It's really interesting. I know the people that I work with, you know, we've been working together for a couple of years now, and it, you know, as a remote viewing team, it probably takes a good year or so before you really start to pick up on the other people's nuances and how they perceive different things, their strengths and weaknesses. You know, different remote viewers have the ability, the strength to pick up on certain targets better than other people, than other remote viewers, because of their life experience or personal makeup, what have you.
Or interest base.
Yeah, exactly. But it takes a good amount of time as a team working together to really start to click. And, you know, within the last year, the team that I work with, we've really gotten to the point where we really, really just click with each other. When we do session work, you know, it doesn't matter who is actually creating the targets or doing the tasking. We've gotten to the point where we know, okay, you know, Vance is, he excels at these type of targets, or he's really lame at these type of targets, or you know, Edward is you know, good at this, or Damien's good at this, or Jessica's good at this. You start to really pick up on where people are at as individuals, and you can task them accordingly. And that's what's really important and really interesting, with any team, is knowing how you work together and knowing how to assign people to get the optimal results, basically.
I'm thinking if we just posted a photograph,
mm-hmm.
It could be any photograph, I don't care what it is, just think of any photograph on the planet, and posted a photograph up on a web page and said, your task is to describe this photograph to me.
Mm-hmm.
You would come out with, if you had 11 people telling you what it looked like, you'd have 11 different answers.
Yeah, you absolutely probably...
If they knew the exact source. I mean,
yeah.
You'd have 11 different ways of telling you what that photograph was.
Exactly. And, you know, depending on what the task is, you have to... there's a couple of unique things that happen when you work with teams. You have a phenomenon known as division of labor, where when you have a team of remote viewers, remote viewing one target, it appears from experience that something happens on a subconscious or unconscious level where the workload is actually divvied up, which, you know, we don't know how to explain this really, other than the fact that it appears to happen, where one remote viewer might focus in on this aspect of the target, another one might focus in on this aspect, another one might focus in on this aspect, and when you put it all together, you have a very detailed picture of the entire site. How that happens, we don't know, but it appears to happen. So that's really unique. And then, of course, you have, you know, the personal perspective, where someone coming from a background of, say, law enforcement, investigation, compared to someone that's coming from a background of, you know, higher education, PhDs, or, you know, something of that nature, their personal perspective is going to be entirely different, although the data is going to be good.
How does it all do you think it relates to their own personal interest bases or their own personal observations in their life? Like, I have a feeling if you tried to task me with picturing a desert, for example, or anything having to do with deserts, I'd probably be, you know, not so good. I just have no experience in that.
Right.
Topography, you know, but if it were more like a here I'm in Michigan, so we've got beaches and water fun and, you know, just all kinds of things, and anything snowstormish, and, you know, because it's just I'm from, it's what I know.
Right.
How much is it based on just the person? Like, could you be totally way off because the target is just not in your experience?
My understanding is, and my experience is, that you could, yes. Based on your your life experiences, your personal biases also. If you think about, you know, maybe if you're not traveled, you haven't been, you know, different places in the world and experienced different types of landscapes, that could be an issue, but also any personal biases, you know, and we talk about this quite a bit in remote viewing, and it comes up in the media and stuff like that when you get into, you know, religious biases and things like that. That stuff, you know, has to be put down before you go into session. You can't go into a session, you know, with any type of biases or thinking you know what the target is or have your mind made up as to what it represents or anything. You have to put that aside and just go in objectively. But if you're remote viewing for example, a death event, and you have a personal problem, you know, subconsciously, maybe it's, you know, something that you're not consciously aware of, but subconsciously you have a problem dealing with death, that's going to affect your ability as a remote viewer to properly extract the information.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple ways you can deal with that. Either you confront it and you know, realize that, you know, this is difficult for me, it's a challenge, and you work on it, or you don't. You know, and that's obviously a personal choice and depends on where you want to, you know, evolve and grow as a remote viewer. But, you know, things like that, yeah, can be very challenging, but definitely can affect your, you know, your performance and your ability to handle certain sites, absolutely. Yeah.
Hmm.
That's why, you know, it's, you know, children, you know, remote viewing, it's a fantastic skill for them, but until you get the lexicon or, you know, the life experiences of, you know, various things, it's hard to deal with certain sites. You know, children can remote view and you know, children, I've seen some sessions by children that are just amazing because their minds are still innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been tainted by society and everything else, and they're pure still. Amazing session work, but by the same token, their minds and their life experiences haven't evolved yet. So when it comes to certain targets, obviously, you know, it's very difficult. But it's very interesting.
This actually reminds me of a discussion I just had yesterday about some movie, and I don't remember the movie at all. But evidently, some. And I'd never seen it. I'm not a movie kind of person usually. But there was this movie evidently about this fellow who may or may not have been from Michigan. I know that the topic of the conversation was Michigan at the time, so I don't know why this came out other than maybe this person was around here or had been here. But anyway, blind, right? He was blind, not sighted. He had no sight, no vision. They did some operation, and then he could see, right? Or something like that. And this was some plot of a movie, too. But even once you can see, they would show him an apple and an orange, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he would have absolutely no clue which was which. You know, he'd be like, I don't know which one's an apple, which one's an orange. I'm sure one's red and hard, or, you know, one's red and shiny, and one's orange and bumpy looking. But I can't identify just by sight what which one is which.
Wow.
Because I never saw them before, you know. So so he would have to touch them in order to know which was which.
Right.
Because he never had that kind of visual feedback before in his life.
Huh.
So you show someone who had just gotten sight an apple and an orange and say which one's an apple, which one's an orange, they'd be like, got
no
me.
Idea.
You know, I can't tell because I've never seen them before, and my, you know, I've only touched, and I know by touch whether you should peel one or, you know, just
right.
bite right into one. You know, he just wouldn't have known. And for some reason, that was a plot of a movie. I have no idea. But anyway, the same thing here. I mean, if I were to look at something like, the target was a sunken ship,
right,
or something. And I'm looking at all this stuff, I you know, like, locate the treasure, or I don't know, whatever the task is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking, I would just have absolutely no clue.
Exactly.
You know, I would go down and look at all these things floating around or whatever, and the different structures, even on National Geographic Channel, when I see sunken ships, I can't identify any piece of it. They're like, ooh, look at this, this is the, you know, masthead or whatever, this is the bell from the ship, and I'm like, it looks like a bump in the sand to me. I just really don't know. But,
yeah,
you know, I that's just outside of my experience.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to have a team.
Mm-hmm.
With different experiences, because as you point out, if you have someone that, say, is coming from a background of, you know, mechanical engineering or something, you know, very detailed and analytical and dealing with mechanics and engineering, electronics, and, you know, they may naturally have a strength when it comes to remote viewing targets that require very detailed mechanical engineering-like abilities, because that's their life experience. So yeah, it's you know, really, really interesting. That's not to say that you wouldn't be able to get decent data on a sunken treasure, but it wouldn't, your mind wouldn't know how to put it together, let's say, as maybe possibly as efficiently as someone that's coming from its background where it kind of all falls in place for them, because subconsciously or consciously they you know what their, you know, their mind can kind of piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
targets. There's interesting targets. Like, well, because you meant, you know, we mentioned Sunken Treasure. I did first, and then you picked up on it. I thought that's kind of cool. And I think that's kind of something that people throughout the ages are interested in. You
oh,
know,
absolutely.
Lost treasures, right?
Lost treasures.
So let's talk about lost treasures for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's two that I can think of that are kind of interesting. There's an island, and how come the names of both of these are now escaping me, of course. I'll never know. But there's an island where some kids had found this shaft into the mountain or into the hill or whatever. Do you remember this story? And now they've dug... They dug down, and now when they dig too far, the water comes back in.
Oak Island.
Oak Island?
Yep.
Okay. Oak Island... may or may not have a treasure from some pirate from way back, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's another one. Out in, a friend had gone to, actually, the very first Ghostly Talk listener had gone to Arizona. And there's a legend of, you know, there's a treasure buried, and they've got, like, the clues, they've got everything. And I think the whole... like basis of an industry, of a tourist industry, is trying to find this treasure out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't, or why haven't, or maybe they have and failed, or maybe they haven't found it and then didn't tell anybody because they've got the treasure, I don't know. But is that like a valid kind of thing for remote viewing?
Oh, sure. It's definitely valid, and there are people that do work on those type targets. I've been tasked on a treasure oriented target myself by another, you know, professional level remote viewer, and I was totally blind, given a, you know, set of coordinates, and did my session work, and came up with something that was very obviously dealt with, you know, pirates and treasure and you know, all types of interesting stuff. And once I got feedback as to what the target was, I was like, wow, this is really interesting. The challenge becomes, and this has always been, you know, one of the, you know, quagmires of remote viewing, is location.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, locations, names, numbers, of course, those type things are very, very difficult to remote view. So when you're dealing with a treasure and you don't know where it's at, but you're trying to find it, eventually, excuse me, you have to deal with location. And it's just so difficult to pinpoint locations with remote viewing. That's always the problem. We can get all types of data and describe, you know, the immediate surroundings where this treasure may be, but to place that geographically into a state or, you know, county or anything else that would be, you know, make it effective or, you know, to be able to go locate it, that's the hard part. You know, it's changing. I mean, the last couple of years alone, the remote viewing community has been developing and researching and applying techniques to start solving some of these problems when it comes to location and numbers and whatnot. But it's still not to the point where we can just very easily pinpoint something. That's the problem. But yeah, it's a very valid target. Absolutely.
And have you heard of any successes?
I've heard of successes, although I cannot personally confirm them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't have hard proof that it, you know, there's all types of, you know, rumors and scuttlebutt and everything else about, you know, people finding certain things. And remote viewing has been, you know, definitely been used to, say, locate, you know, locations of oil and things like that for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that for a fact. But in regards to specifically treasure, yeah, there's a couple cases where apparently that there's been some success, but I can't absolutely with any certainty confirm it.
Interesting. Because that's got to be one of the things that are is just so interesting, you know, so interesting to, like, pretty much every person who would think, you know, what's remote viewing good for? Oh, well, find, you know, lost treasure. That kind of thing.
I mean, that's one of the, the biggest questions you get is remote viewing is, you know, besides, you know, what can you do with it? I mean, the first couple questions are, can you find treasure? Can you win the lottery? And can you find missing children? I mean, those are, you know, the big questions that you always get, you know, besides the, some of the bigger esoteric type questions, you know, that you the field. But yeah, absolutely, can you find treasures? And it definitely has its place. But again, it's difficult to pinpoint the geographic locations, and you would have to have a team, just like dealing with missing children. A remote viewing team is not the total solution. You have to work with ground field agents that are going to be doing the field work, that have training and tracking and everything else that comes with that type of territory, to work together. You know, just like missing children, you're not going around law enforcement and, you know, doing the slam dunk finding the missing person. You have to work with law enforcement. And it's going to be that one little bit of information that you relay to an agency that's going to turn on a light bulb in someone's head to get them to go back and re-interview someone for the third or fourth time, and it'll cause that subject to mess up in their interview, and it blows open the case.
Mm-hmm.
That's where remote view excels. Remote viewing excels. It's in conjunction with the field teams. So in regards to the treasure or whatnot, definitely, you know, has an application, but you would have to have the field teams in place, trained and knowing how to actually do the field work part of it. But, yeah, it would be really interesting.
Well, just so you know, that's in good company. That's in good company throughout the years. The one of my favorite topics is Edgar Cayce.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And his body of work. And we only had him for one lifetime, unfortunately.
Right.
But he did produce a lot of work.
Although some people would say we've got him for a second lifetime.
Do we?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that believe that there's an individual alive today that's involved in prophecy and whatnot that is somehow a reincarnation of Cayce. Which I find interesting. But, you know.
Well, that would be interesting, but I haven't seen a lot out of that, so I guess it's not hitting me in the face. But I do know that... in Edgar Cayce, the original ones, body of work, he did indeed try to do things like locate Amelia Earhart.
Right, exactly.
And whether or not, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in his readings about that, but of course, obviously, we all know she had not been found, even though he was looking for her. He looked for a kid who would have been unable to take care of himself on his own, who had gotten away from an institution that he was at, and I don't think he was successful in actually locating the kid, although they did end up finding the kid, and he was okay then. But he looked for... I don't remember, what was he looking for in the Bahamas? Was he looking for Atlantis?
Or probably Atlantis. I know he did a lot of Atlantis.
Then he was probably looking for every single time he tried to do something on that particular project, it didn't work out very well. And the information, because that's what they called it, the information would tell him that, that's because you would profit off of it, and you can't. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't profit off of the information that was being given. That was just in the rules of how he had to work.
Right.
And he too had some difficulty with locations.
Right.
Whereas if you had some kind of malady, I've got arthritis in my limbs or something like that, he would be able to visit you, in his sleep. He'd visit you, tell the history of it, when you were two, you fell off a tree, this and that and the other thing, and here's how you fix it, and the people who followed the medical lines were were, or medical readings were just, it was night and day, you know, once they followed it. They would be, if not cured, at least much, much alleviated and able to live their lives then. So it was, he definitely had this wide array of different things he tried to tackle in his lifetime, and some were more successful than others. Obviously, the medical readings is what he's famous for because they were just wildly successful.
Right.
So he was, I guess, good at that.
Right.
And that's what he was good at. So remote viewing is still young, though.
Yeah, it's still such a young science, and it's still evolving and developing, and we're still dealing with developing techniques to extract different information. And, I know the Amelia Earhart thing. They're actually, the last I heard, there was a team of scientists and researchers and field people that actually have some sort of funding, and they feel as though they have a location where they're going to, you know, go try to pull up this aircraft and Amelia. They feel as though they have a location. And that was like a year or more ago that I read about that. I haven't heard anything yet, but it'd be interesting to see, you know, how that pans out, because I know there's been remote viewing teams. I know specifically the Hawaiian Remote Viewing Guild, HRVG.org, they did a huge project on the location of Amelia, and they have some really interesting directional, locational type of technologies and techniques that they've developed over the years, and they felt as though they had a location that apparently jives with where this research team is going to look for. So it'd be really interesting as far as remote viewing feedback type thing, if they actually find anything to validate that remote viewing work. It'd be really interesting.
Did you happen to hear last night's Coast to Coast?
No, I missed it. With Major Dan?
Yes.
No, I missed it.
What do you think about remote viewing future tragedies?
Well, I think, you know, there's been enough validated type of scenarios where I feel as though it can be done. Because as we understand, certain events tend to have, you know, what you call a larger spike in the timeline. You know, big events tend to be a little easier to remote view when it comes to past, present, future. When you're dealing with future events, of course, you're dealing with probabilities, but the big events create a bigger spike on the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it's possible. Very, very difficult. I've had some experience with that myself. I don't get too much into it because it's just a tough thing. Of course, Major Dames is you know, that's one of his...
that's his specialties. Yeah, one of his specialties. Yeah,
it's one of his fortes, you know, doom and gloom. And
he doesn't sound like it. You know, I mean, he sounds like, very serious and but yet at the same time very, you know, happy and going
Major
about
Dames
his business. And then he, you know, but his whole, like, what he does and what he publishes, you know, and puts out there is almost always, like, very, very bad or sad, you know, and so...
Well, that's how he got the nickname, right? I mean,
yeah, the personality doesn't seem to match the life work that he's performing.
Right.
But he is, I think, doing a fantastic service. I know he made, he's now making those remote viewing classes and stuff online, you know, things like that.
Oh, absolutely.
So and he's getting remote viewing out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most people know that I've trained with Major Dames. He is a fantastic instructor, bar none. I mean, just an amazing, amazing individual. When it comes to teaching and remote viewing and skills, he's very sincere, very passionate about what he does.
That was very evident last night.
Yeah, and, you know, to his credit, you know, besides the fact that, you know, we wouldn't have remote viewing in the, you know, the public sector if it wasn't for Major Dames, you know, bringing it out of the shadows, so to speak. But, you know, just recently he's got this, that big earthquake prediction that he made on Coast to Coast a while back. That, you know, in remote viewing sense, pretty much, you know, did a bang-up job on nailing this huge quake and tsunami that happened. So, you know, he's working with some newer directional location type of techniques that he's working with his team, and he seems to be getting results and on narrowing down, you know, geographically some of these events and stuff like that. So, this is, where remote viewing needs to go. It needs to work on new techniques, new technologies, and, go for it. Future events, though, like I say, it's really, really difficult. But, yeah, I believe it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's been shown.
Yeah.
Major Dames has shown that over the past several
years. It's not just Major Dames. I mean, there's obviously other people, and there's other people that are, not remote viewers that are, dealing with future prophecy type things and have shown, a certain amount of accuracy. So there's something there, absolutely.
Hmm. What does... I hate these, interview style things where you have to ask questions because...
Oh, absolutely.
But, and I know that probably annoys even Ghostly Talk listeners, but I have so many questions. That's why I'm just plying you with questions. What do remote viewers get out of it then? In a general sense. I mean, I don't think there's one or two I guess they are companies or institutions that charge for their work.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And they're hired by businesses, they're hired by
absolutely.
Governments, they're hired by individuals looking for things or answers. But for the most part, what I see is remote viewing has become a lot more open.
Right.
And a lot more generalized. And for people do it now basically for free. I mean, if you... had something like that, you could approach several different groups
right.
and see if somebody would do that kind of work for you, and somebody may.
Right.
What do you get out of it then if you're doing remote viewing work for free?
Well, it depends, I guess, on what sort of work you're doing. A lot of people remote view as just a personal pursuit, a personal quest to kind of get more familiar with themselves, so they can remote view their optimal job, or they can remote view their optimal vacation, or they can remote view where they should live, or things that people may have a problem tackling themselves. Remote viewing gives them a tool to kind of objectively do it, and without you can even task out a friend. If I wanted to know, hey, what should I be doing in my life? What should I do in my life? I could task you as a remote viewer, blind, to remote view my optimal life path or my optimal trajectory in life and those type of questions. So a lot of people get into remote viewing for the personal pursuits, the personal development. A lot of people get into, and there's so many different things that you could apply remote viewing to. A lot of people get into medical remote viewing, where they can actually apply these skills to help diagnose medical ailments. There's quite a few doctors that have gone through the professional level training and use remote viewing as a complement to their medical skills to actually, you get a problem, someone has a medical problem that you can't diagnose with conventional methods. Remote viewing gives you an unconventional data collection method where they can actually go in and via remote viewing and diagnose something. So that's a field that I think is fascinating and very rewarding, because not a lot of people are doing it, but it's starting to pick up and people are starting to realize that, hey, this is something. And it kind of goes along with what we're talking about with Casey. If you have the ability to diagnose people that were not able to be diagnosed with conventional science, what a amazing humanitarian type of gift and tool that could be.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, not to sound like a greedy schmuck, but from a business perspective, that would be a very, very ethical, moral, but also profitable business.
Mm-hmm.
That would be worth every penny if you had the training and the validatable track record to actually do something like that. That would be just an amazing type thing. But there's so many different, paths of remote viewing, but that's just a couple, personal things. Of course, a lot of people get into remote viewing just to, start working with sports betting, mm-hmm. deal with lotteries, mm-hmm. That's a valid thing, very difficult, but, nothing wrong with that. It's a personal interest or whatever. It's entertainment. It's just fun.
But no matter what the reason, just the fact that people are doing it and it's happening, and we get results like we did on ORVP 1 and 2,
right.
It's showing itself. I mean, it's definitely up and coming and showing itself that, it's here.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line the side effect is that, remote viewing is just one small little tool. And really, the side effect is that people are becoming more aware and more in tune human beings, and that's really the goal. The goal is not to just remote view. The goal is to improve your mind and your brain and your intuitiveness and your awareness and everything else. I mean, that's really that's the reward for me is to go throughout my day and be more aware of everything around me, to be aware of, the movement of a tree, to be aware of not to sound cheesy, but the grasshopper at my feet. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the general awareness that you start picking up as a side effect is really, really the big thing of remote viewing.
Well, they do say that you have to keep exercising your mind, otherwise it could atrophy, and then you're left thoughtless.
It's a muscle just like everything else. I mean, it's a mental, mind science muscle, and you have to exercise it, flex it, and work it out, so to speak, to get better. It's a skill, like playing piano or any other musical instrument or any other type of skill. You have to practice. You have to stay diligent and disciplined. And no matter what it is you want to get out of it, it can be achieved. And you just got to stay with it, whether it's a professional pursuit or just a personal pursuit.
When did it change from like Ingo Swann's original thought? From what I remember, the ARE, American. Oh wow!
Yeah,
yeah.
We always forget that.
Not ARE. It's the AASP, the American Society for Psychical Research. So
right.
ASPR, and had Ingo Swann for a while.
Right.
And he didn't at first. I mean, this is a long time ago. He didn't at first call it remote viewing until later. But he at first thought that he was sending his vision senses out into the mm-hmm. world, right? And instead of having that stuff come to him, the information come to him, he was physically going out, or not physically, but psychically or something, going out and seeing these remote places and these remote things written on pieces of paper and, the different things that they had tasked him with early on.
Right.
So he was going out, and now it doesn't seem like, because do you ever feel like you're going out of your body or going out to a location?
I've had experiences, and, they happen occasionally for, remote viewers, depending on your personal background and everything else mm-hmm. that we spoke about before. But I've had experiences where, in remote viewing terms, they call bilocation.
Right.
Where you feel as though, even though you're physically still conscious, you're still sitting in my office at my desk, you feel as though you're at that target site. I mean, you really feel like you're physically there. And, that's when we say a remote viewer has bilocated,
mm-hmm.
I've had those experiences, and, it really seems like you're there, and, but I know I'm not. I know I'm physically still conscious, and I'm still sitting at my desk, but, it really seems like I'm out of my body, so to speak, at a different location. And, I don't know if we really know exactly. Science-wise, I don't know if we can ascertain exactly what is going on, other than we seem to have the ability to get information or possibly displace our awareness to multiple locations, maybe. So maybe you're not, you know, going out of your body, so to speak, but maybe there's a certain aspect of your, you know, your mind or your soul or your awareness, whatever, that actually is able to go to another site. Or is it that you're just connecting to something that's already there and you're not going anywhere? I don't know. But I've definitely had experiences where, you know, I felt as though I'm not here anymore. I'm there, but I'm not lying down in a bed with, you know, drool coming out of my mouth, you know, doing the altered state deal, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, obviously there are people that do these, you know, this altered state type of extended remote viewing where they, you know, they go deep into these and they really, it seems like they kind of go out of their bodies and do these outbound type of outbounder experiments and whatnot. But as far as just regular remote viewing, it's changed over the years. Like you say, one of the theories was that they used to, you know, go outside their bodies and go to the location, and that's obviously radically changed, where they feel as though,
mm-hmm.
no, you're tapping into a signal line, you know, you're tapping into this matrix or whatever you want to call it, and you're just tapping into this funnel of information that's trickling down into your, you know, unconscious, up to your subconscious and through to your conscious, and then you're getting it down on paper. But those are all theories. I mean, we really don't know enough.
Well, I'd have to say, no matter what, it sure sounds like we're just scratching the surface. What is reality? Space, time, the whole thing. We're scratching the surface. We have to close the show.
Oh,
geez.
So it went by really
quick. 9 p.m., yes. Because Ghostly Talk is only on from 7 till 9 p.m. live. Of course, this edition of Ghostly Talk will be up in the archives tomorrow. And if you're listening to this at any other time other than Sunday night from 7 till 9 p.m., then, well, you're not listening live. So, Vance West of TrinityScience.com, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys, and let me thank you for, you know, doing the ORVP2. Wonderful results. Thank you, all the remote viewers that submitted work, and Will for doing the management, and Damien for doing the tasking on it.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic jobs, everyone, and look forward to doing the next one.
I hope so. I know I'm geeked as well.
Wish you for fall.
Fall?
Excellent.
Yeah. You want to do fall?
Like September, October.
That sounds good. All right.
Sounds good.
Then everybody, brush up on your remote viewing, because it'll be coming up again in just another season or two. So with that, you guys, I do have to say thank you so much for listening to Ghostly Talk. Visit our website at www.ghostlytalk.com. And, of course, we're aired live on Sunday nights from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Pioneer Radio Network. That's pioneer.rolo, R-O-L-O.net. And we will be back next week with George Lutz of the Amityville Horror, the experiencer of the Amityville Horror, and we will be discussing the movie, the Amityville Horror, the remake,
yeah,
that's coming out on the 15th. So we'll see what happens with that. Thanks, Vance. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And with that, we're going to make way for W Paranormal coming up next on Pioneer. Talk to you next week.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.